Turning to our roundtable, as you heard, it's decision time for the U.S. concerning Cuban dissident Posada. Also, Congress rejects a proposed ban on women in combat, and we ask the question, do women want to see their real selves in beauty advertising? Joining us from NPR studios in Washington, D.C. is Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania, and from Martha's Vineyard, Callie Crossley, social cultural commentator on the television program Beat the Press from Boston, and in our Chicago bureau, Mary Mitchell, columnist with the Chicago Sun-Times. Welcome to you all, and let's get right to it. So you just heard the story of Carlos Posada Carriles, who allegedly detonated a bomb in a Cuban jetliner. The Bush administration has said they won't extradite him to Cuba, but it's Venezuela who actually wants him. Is this all clever spin, Mary Frances?
Well, we talked recently on this show about Joanne Chesimard, who is in Cuba and the United States demanding her back from Cuba. With Cuba, everything is exceptional. It's the usual hypocrisy. The Bush administration, inconsistencies in many ways. I think ultimately what will happen to this guy is that he will be given asylum at some point. But Cuban politics, the Cuban-American community in Florida, the fact that the Republican Party relies on their votes, and the fact that Cuba is seen as the last little ragtag bastion of what used to be communism in this hemisphere makes all this very different. So the talk about terrorism in this case just turns out to be mostly talk.
Well, Callie, you know, Mary Frances just mentioned the Cuban-American lobby, very strong, especially in Florida, but even that community doesn't seem too hot on this guy.
Yeah, I think that the Bush administration finds itself not only in a state of hypocrisy, but betwixt and between, because he really doesn't want to respond to Castro. I mean, that's what it comes down to. Castro is sitting in his space saying, okay, you said this is what you wanted to do, and now you're harboring this guy, and you're harboring him under ridiculous circumstances. You knew he was here. You'd let him roam around. So I think that's a particularly face-saving problem for him with regard to Cuba. And I think it's also a problem in the fact that he dropped his petition asking for U.S. political asylum. So now it's really on the line. What are they going to do, just from a political standpoint? I don't know how you get out of this unless you just do what it seems to me has to be done, which is to let him go to Venezuela at this point, because if you harbor him, you're saying that everything that you have said in terms of your stance against terrorism in the rest of the world is just only when it relates to everybody except in this instance, and that's just not going to fly.
But Callie mentioned, Farias, Mary Frances, Callie Thanks. Mentioned Venezuela. See, that's another part of this problem here for the Bush administration. Hugo Chavez in Venezuela is almost as disliked as Castro, if you can put them in the same category. There is evidence that's been talked about of the United States attempting to make sure he didn't get reelected or to overturn his government, to find some way to get him out because he bad talks about the United States and makes all kinds of policies that we don't like. So to extradite him to Venezuela would be really tough for the administration to swallow.
It seems to me that also we've talked on this show about a situation where the U.S. government has allied itself with the government in Sudan, which of course is accused of genocide. And this is yet another case in which the U.S. finds two different policy objectives, the war on terror and its idea of who is an ally and who is a foe, in opposition. In cases like this, Mary Mitchell, what should journalists do in terms of explaining these kinds of complicated stories with different allegiances in the government's mind?
Well, first of all, I think this is a legitimate issue in which you can put pressure on the Bush administration to live up to all the rhetoric it's been saying for the past couple of years. They can't be let off the hook. You can't say, well, you know, it's a complicated situation. No, it's not that complicated. The guy is a terrorist, and the Bush administration defined terrorism and said that it was going to attack and address and track down terrorists all over the world. So in this regard, journalists have to keep the pressure up and not let the Bush administration lead them astray with a spin that really doesn't get to the issue. This is hypocrisy at its worst, and it cannot be. We cannot let that slide.
Let me turn to another topic that has to do with the whole war on terrorism. Of course, the U.S. went into Iraq on the idea that it was involved in the war on terrorism, whether or not it was. We are there. Four more soldiers have just died. And recently, the House Armed Services Committee rejected proposals intended to stop women from serving in support teams, which back up frontline combat troops. Many women have died doing these kind of ground support operations. Some people say women have no role in combat. Other people say women should do everything men do. Callie, what do you think?
I think that women should be able to do whatever they feel that they're qualified to do, and that and they have proven to be qualified to do. I think this is paternalism at its worst. I mean, I just can't believe that in this day and age that there's this kind of discussion, particularly in light of the recruiting problems that all of the armed services are having. And in fact, the armed services folks are saying, "Hey, we didn't ask for this. Where is this coming from?" I went online yesterday just to get the pulse of the country, if you will. I do the AOL poll. I just wanted to see what people were saying. And it was running well out ahead that women absolutely should not be banned from doing these things. If they want to participate, they should be able to. And, in fact, they have proven themselves worthy to do so.
But I think America might be, it's just variety, America might be uncomfortable with the idea of women, especially mothers, dying in combat. Go ahead.
This is Mary Mitchell, and I will have to just say that the word here is ban. Whenever you say that whenever government says it's going to ban women from doing anything, it becomes a gender issue. I don't think it's that complicated. I really think that it's an issue of, look at the war that we are engaging in right now. A lot of these women went into the military thinking that they were going just to get an education. A lot of them are single parents. They've left their kids home with the mothers and their grandmothers. And they're dying in combat. And so what about the children? I think that you have to look at this realistically and kind of get over the word ban. What makes sense here? And it doesn't make sense for women to be on the front line given the makeup of the military today.
Well, I think I disagree with that. It's Mary Frances. I think, first of all, women have been in combat in every war that the United States has fought, some surreptitiously and others that people knew about, going all the way back to the Revolution. The second thing is that there was a long struggle when women were permitted to be in the military service to have women in all of the categories, because women were paid less, they were treated worse, because they were told, you don't go into combat, you don't even support combat. So therefore, and there were people who actually campaigned and struggled, women, in order to get equal treatment for women in the military. I also think that a man's life is just as valuable as a woman's life. I think that my cousin, who is a woman, her life, and my cousin, who is a man, both of who are in Iraq, I think that both their lives are valuable. I don't want to see him killed any more than I want to see her killed. If men can go into combat, if our sons and our daughters are equally valuable, fathers are as valuable to their children as mothers are to their children. So I think that the whole thing is just silly, and that women, as Callie said, ought to be able to do whatever they feel qualified to do, and that the debate is really about gender and tradition. And now we see the military saying it's ridiculous. And so I think we should move on.
I want to interrupt. Can I just interrupt 1 second? Because I don't want to leave it out here that I think that a man's life is less valuable than a woman's life. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that in the military today, there are a lot of, especially black women, who are single parents who went into the military not thinking they were going to engage in combat. And so a single mother who has no one else, there's no father around, who gets killed in Iraq as leaving children who are unprotected with no support. That's why I think that this is a problem. Not that I think that a father's life is less valuable.
Well, what about is a parent's life more valuable than someone who doesn't have kids? There are a lot of people who've been deployed who sometimes there's a two-parent family that both are in the military and both are deployed and the kids have to go live with relatives. Sometimes it's a single parent family, male or female headed. Should the military make any kind of exceptions for parents?
Well, this is Callie. I think that in some instances there have been some exceptions. For example, the same thing when there are two siblings, there's some leeway there about whether or not the next sibling should be able to go if one has been discharged already or sent already into combat. So I think that there's some flexibility there. But I also think, if I just could answer, follow up with what Mary Mitchell said, I think that this war in particular, the Iraq war, has made clear that even if you entered into the services thinking that this is a great education or I can have income, you know now there is a huge possibility that you are going into combat, and I think that that's going to continue. So if for no other reason, and that needs to be put on the table, and everybody can ascertain that and understand that that's a possibility, and so that we should not then, in the policy-making part of it, determine where women shall land if they wish to go up the chain of command and into leadership. And that would be my thing. I think that the more women we have climbing up that military ladder up into leadership, then I believe that we could have maybe a different sensibility about how we approach getting into war in the first place.
And Farai, don't even get Mary Frances, don't even get me started on, in this day and age, there shouldn't be anybody of any color who has to go into the service just to get an education or a job because the economy doesn't produce enough, there's no money to go to school, and that they are going into the service and have to do it just because we don't do enough out here to do what we ought to do. I mean, don't get me started on that. That's maybe is a separate topic. But,
it's a big one. A lot of people have on their mind. Speaking of a separate topic, very quickly, want to get to something. In Maryland, a stay-at-home mom who describes herself as having strong traditional family values organized something called Citizens for a Responsible Curriculum. It's essentially against certain sex education curriculum in schools. There is a huge fight there, Montgomery County, a Washington suburb of Maryland. But across the country, there are these fights over sex education. Should the federal government try to standardize sex education? Is it sort of argued abstinence only? Or should it be left up to individual towns and counties to kind of fight it out on their own, whether or not they teach this, given the fact that, you know, some kids in some schools are having sex in elementary school?
Well,
no, that's a tough question.
Well, this is one that is Mary Frances. I think that this fight shows all of the worst kinds of instincts that have come to the forefront in recent years. What I mean by that is many of the people who want the curriculum to only have abstinence only, not teach anything about condoms, not tell anybody about sex, really, or sexuality, do it for religious reasons. Now, I think that it's okay for them to do whatever they want to with their own children in their own families and teach them however they want to and follow whatever principles. But to impose ignorance on other people's children by making them not have any sex education at all in the schools or to be told about any of these things, I think is unfortunate. And I think in particular, the sort of gay bashing, the sort of unscientific gay bashing that goes on. So these people in Montgomery County want it to be taught that maybe homosexuality is a choice, even
well,
though scientists say that it's
that
not.
One very quick comment.
Well, this is Mary Mitchell. There's still a controversial way of looking at sex education. I think the debate here is whether or not you tell both sides of the argument, not saying that you support either side of the argument, but you allow a person to tell both sides of the argument. And I don't think we should be afraid of that. I don't think we should be afraid of that conversation.
Even if it's not scientific.
Even if it's not scientific, you know, every day there's a new scientific study that says one thing or another. You can find scientific studies to back up the idea that homosexuality is a choice. I mean, I agree with that, but you can find scientists.
I don't know.
Well, this is a much bigger conversation.
Yeah.
We're going to have to leave this for another time. We're out of time. So from Washington, Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania, Callie Crossley, social cultural commentator on Beat the Press in Boston, and in our Chicago bureau, Mary Mitchell, columnist with the Chicago Sun-Times. We will pick this up again. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.